All right, Rabbi Say, good morning. Let's begin. A beautiful daf today. So today's daf is Mem Dalid. We are picking up on the bottom of Mem Gimel Amud Beis, massive Rav Sheshes. So 2, 4, 6, 8, 9. So remember, again, just to reorient ourselves a little bit. So the Mishnah spoke about the idea that if one sells his Eved Kenani, either to a Gentile, to an Ovid Kochavim, or to Chutz La'aretz, there is a rabbinic penalty, and the slave, the Eved, is automatically set free. The master must give him a get shichur. So the Gemara went ahead and quoted the Braisa. The Braisa said that if one goes ahead and borrows money from an Ovid Kochavim and collateralizes the slave. So the Mishnah, the Braisa said that as soon as the Ovid Kochavim puts on his Nimuso, so the Eved goes free. So the Gemara says, what's Nimuso? Nashki. Right, that's right. All right. So what's Nimuso? So the Nimuso ultimately is the Nimuso is like the little necklace that it used to be, again, that an Eved would wear something around his neck, signifying the fact that he was in fact an Eved. So the Gemara says, Masiv Rav Sheshes. So Rav Sheshes said the following, Harisin Vachakiros Varise Bate Avos. So we'll say these are all different types of shared farming agreements. So Arisin, Rashi says, is a sharecropper. So sharecropper would generally, the way it would work is, I would go ahead, I'm a sharecropper, I'm farming a field that belongs to someone else, and what I get is, I pay the owner of the field a particular amount of money. A particular amount of the crop. Right? I keep part of the crop, he keeps part of the crop. As opposed to chakiros is essentially I'm renting or leasing a field. So there's a flat fee. Again, obviously, if you're a sharecropper, so how much the owner of the field gets depends on that year's particular bounty. And chakiros, I'm paying a flat fee for the field. So the Mishnah says, so the Bryce says over here, aris and sharecroppers, chakiros, field leasers, arise bate avos, so we'll say arise bate avos, are inherited sharecropping situations. That sometimes you have a situation where my father was a sharecropper on this field, and then when he passed away, so that right or that position was inherited by the children. In all of these cases, va'ovid kochavim shemashkin sadeh li Yisrael, or for that matter, a non-Jew who ultimately pledged his field as collateral to a loan that was made by a Jew. In other words, that he borrowed money from the Jew and collateralized his field. Even though the Yisrael made his Nimuso, nevertheless, the field is exempt from Meiser. Now, the interesting part over here is the following. In this case, this is a situation where in all of these cases, the field is owned by the non-Jew. And either the Jew is utilizing it as a sharecropper, or it's collateral for the Jew. But the idea that the Braisa is saying is, even though the Yisrael put Nimuso on it, nevertheless, the field is still considered to be Gentile property, and therefore is potter from Meiser. Just as an aside, Rashi points out that this Braisa reflects the opinion that Gentile-owned property in Eretz Yisrael is exempt from Trumos and Meiser. So understand, That statement is a huge machlokas. Actually, we mentioned this a couple of weeks back. This plays a major role in the whole Heter Mechira controversy by Shemitah. But we're not going to get into it right now. But for our purposes, this particular time holds that Gentile owned property is exempt from Trumos and Meiser. So the Gemara says, "Isagadaitcha nashki sad nashki nashki isagadaitcha nashki." And if you say that Nimuso, like we said before, like we translated, means something you put around the neck of the Eved, then Sada bas nashki. Then can you put something around the neck of the Sada? Meaning the definition doesn't make sense. Ela Amar Rav Sheshes Zman. Rather, Rav Sheshes says what Nimuso means is Zman. That in other words, that in this case, let's take the collateral case, that Lamaisa, again, even once the time for the payment of the loan comes due, ultimately the property is still considered to be in the possession of the Gentile, and therefore it is exempt from Trumos and Maestros. If that's the case, Kash is Man Azman. So mostly have a contradiction, because in the first Braisa, that indicates that if the Yisrael borrows money from a Gentile and uses the Eved as collateral, so the Braisa ruled that even though the Ovid Kochavim put his Nimuso, which now we're translating as time, the time for the debt came to, Never, it's at that point in time, the Eved goes free because he's considered to be the property of the Gentile. Yet in the case of the field, what you're saying is that even once the time for the debt came due, Lemaise again, the field is not considered to be the property of the Jew, but it's considered to be the property of the Gentile. That's a machlok, that's a stira, to which the Gemara says, lo kasha, hadimatazmane, hadilomatazmane. It's not a contradiction. In the case of the Eved, the date of the loan came due. Therefore, because the date of the loan came due, therefore the Maisa, the Eved, the collateral, belongs to the Ovid Kocham, and therefore he goes free. In the case of the field, the date of the loan did not yet come due. Therefore, the field is still considered to be in the possession of the Gentile, and therefore, again, it's exempt from Shemos and Maisros. El gabe Eved, dematas manei tzvicha l'neimar. So, but if that's the case, do you have to even bring up a case? If a Jew collateralized his Eved because he borrowed money from a Gentile, and the debt came due, and the Jew doesn't have the money to pay back, so this Gentile is going to seize the collateral. Do I need the Braisa to teach me that the Eved is now the property of the non-Jew, and therefore, again, by definition, goes free? That case is obvious. To which the Gemara says, Elo, idi vi idi de lomatas mane. Rather, you have to say that both the case of the Eved and the case of the field are both where the debts did not yet become due. V'lo kasha, halugufa, halapera. It's not a contradiction. In the case of the Eved, the Jewish master literally collateralized the guf of the Eved. And therefore, again, because he collateralized the guf of the Eved, therefore, again, the Eved is considered to be the property of the non-Jew, and therefore the rabbinic penalty kicks in, and therefore the Eved goes free. On the other hand, in the case of the field, Lemaisa, again, the Gentile is not collateralizing the field, rather he's collateralizing the peros of the field. And in that case, again, because he still retains ownership over the actual field itself, therefore Lemaisa, again, the field is still exempt from Shumos and Maisos. Top of Mem Dalet Amud Aleph, V'Baisim. The other possibility is, B'Shalava Amanas L'Mashkino V'LaMashkino. The other possibility is that in both of these cases, the debt has come due, and therefore, again, the creditor has every right to go ahead and seize the collateral. But in the case of the field, in the case of the Eved, even though the Gentile creditor did not yet seize the Eved, because he has the right to seize the Eved, because of that, the rabbis penalized the Jewish master, and therefore said the Eved goes free. In the case of the field, however, only once the creditor actually seizes the field will the field be considered to be under Jewish ownership and once again be chayiv in Shumos and Maisros. Fine. Tani Rabbanan. Second line from the top. Mem Dalet Amud Aleph. Govo Bechovo O Shelachu Sikriko. So I say, tonight the Gemara is going to deal with a couple of different cases. Now, let me take one step back. So what we have over here, what we've established is that if a Jewish master sells his Eved Kenani, either to a Gentile master or to Chutz La'aretz, the Eved goes free. It's a rabbinic penalty. Rabbinic penalty either because the master has precluded the possibility of the Eved from doing mitzvos anymore because he's living with a non-Jewish master, or he's caused him to have to leave the land of Israel. Because of either one of those two things, there's a rabbinic penalty, slave goes free. The Gemara now is going to discuss a variation of a variety of different cases that are not as simple. So number one, Givao Bechovo, let's say a Jew owes a non-Jew money, and the Jew doesn't have money to pay, and therefore the non-Jewish creditor takes the Jew's Eved Kenani as satisfaction for the debt. O, shalacho sikrikun. So we'll say sikrikun is a bandit, someone who pressures. If you look at Rashi, he says, b'shashi somuf karen la riga, va'amr lo obi ko'chavim, sa karka zu o Eved zu benichani. So sikrikun is like a blackmailer, or like an extortionist, someone who's trying to extract money from the Jew, and the Jew, in order to save himself from the sikrikun, says, take my Eved. So we'll say, these are not like the cases of the Mishnah where a person is just straight out selling the Eved. So what's the halacha in these cases? Lo yatza l'cheiros. In these cases, the Eved does not go free. Rashi says, da'onesu, because these are considered to be extenuating circumstances, and therefore the Eved does not go free. U'bichobolo, is that true? That if a Jew owes a non-Jew money, and he doesn't have money to pay, and he gives his Eved in payment of the loan, that the Eved doesn't go free, or minhi, or raise the kasha, harisha ansu, beis hamelech goranu, if the king came and seized my granary, im bechovo, chayiv la'aser, if the king seized my granary because I owed back taxes, then what's Rabbi Osai? Then I have to give meiser from the grain that was seized. However, in Ba'an Paros, but ultimately, again, if the king just took my property because he's the king and he could take my property, then what? Pater mila aser. I have the ability to go, I'm exempt from tithing. To which the Gemara says, shiny hasam to kamishtar shile. That case is different. Why? Because lamaisa, again, when the king goes ahead and seizes my granary, if it's to go ahead and satisfy my debt, then I am benefiting from the fact that I'm paying my debt. And because of that, it only makes sense that I still have to pay my trumos and maestros. Look at Rashi, to come ishtar shile, hari nehena mehem, sheporea chovo. I'm getting benefits from the fact that the king seized my granary because my debt is being paid. Hilchach, le'inyin isur chayeh b'maiser. Therefore, I still have to pay my maiser. Umiu gabe eved kinasahu mishum mechira. He vizeh lo machar midaito ala shalur tsono gava v'amai niknesei. But in the case of the eved, I will say, remember again, these cases is where the eved is being seized against my will. Remember, the rabbinic penalty is only in a case where I willingly sell my eved. And therefore, in these cases, the rabbinic penalty should not apply. Tashma, da'amar rav, hamocher avdo leparhanag. Ovid kochavim yatzal acherus. If one sells his eved to a paranag ovid kochavim, what's a paranag ovid kochavim? Rashi says paranag matzik v'sam alilos u'machra lo b'dinei apor shalav. So a paranag is really like an extortionist. Someone who goes and essentially blackmails me to get what I want, to get what he wants, excuse me. So if I go, now in this case over here, the paranag is not trying to steal the eved from me, he's just trying to force me to sell it to him. So if I sell my eved to a Gentile paranag, so the halach is yatzal acheros. The eved goes see. Now, both said that contrast to what we just said before. Because before, what we were saying was what? Was that the only time an eved goes free is if I willingly sell the eved to a Gentile. Here's a case of where I'm not willingly selling the eved, right? I'm being forced to sell the eved. But yet the Braisa still rules that the eved goes free. To which the Gemara says, no. Hasam habile lefayes velo pies. There, the Jewish master should have found a way to appease the parhanag with something else. With something else, why giving him the eved? Find a way to, he's looking for property, he's looking for money, find something else to give him. And therefore, again, because I did not do that, therefore the rabbinic penalty sets in and the eved goes free. Gufa, Amarav, Hamocher Abdul Parnak Ovikoham, Yatzel Cherus. Rav says, if one sells his eved kinani to a Gentile extortionist, so what's the halacha? The eved kinani goes free. I my havele le me avad, but what should the Jewish master have done? Meaning he was being extorted. Havele le fayes velopies. He should have gone ahead and literally he should have given the extortionist. This is a different version of what we just learned. He should have given the extortionist some other piece of property to be mefayes to appease him, and he didn't do so. So because he didn't do so, the rabbinic penalty sets in, and the eved kinani goes free. By Rabbi Yirmiyah, Rabbi Yirmiyah asked the kasha, machru l'shloshim yom mahu. So this is an interesting case. What happens if the Jewish master sells his eved kinani for 30 days? 30 days, a 30-day sale. And after 30 days, the eved kinani comes back to the Jewish master. So is this considered to be the type of sale that the rabbis would penalize and say that the eved kinani goes free or not? So Tashma the Amar Rav Hamocher Abdul Farnak Ovikolcham Yatzel Cheirus. So yeah, well, Rav said that if you go ahead and you sell your eved to a Gentile extortionist, the eved goes free. To which the Gemara says, here's what's interesting. The Havamina over here seems to be that Lemaisa, the extortionist, just wants to use the eved for a little while and is then going to return him to the Jewish master, which sounds like a case of a short-term sale, and yet the Braisa still rules that what? That the eved goes free, to which the Gemara says, "Hassan beparanag ovid kucham she'ino chozeres." No. The paranag, the extortionist, does not plan on giving back the eved. That's why the price ruled. That's why Rav ruled that ultimately he goes free. Machro chutz mimelachto mahu. So what happens? Another question. What happens if the Jewish master sells the eved chutz mimelachto? I was about to say chutz mimelachto means that l'maisa, I'm selling you the eved, but you can't work him. You can't work him, right? You can't go ahead and cause him to do any labor. So we'll say, so Rashi points out, v'chutz mi'olachto, gufal kanoi lecha, you own him, however, ubilvach lo tishtabed bo. But don't go ahead and don't work him. They will say, now why in a million years would somebody buy an eved if you can't work him? So Rashi says, oh, I'll tell you why. Ela lahasil l'shivchas levlados. Because he wants the slave to father slave children, right? He wants the slave ultimately again to father children with the shivcha. So again, so what's the halacha there? Mahu. Mahu. So what's that? See, here the Gemara is asking, in these cases where the sale is not complete, does the rabbinic penalty kick in when the sale is not complete or not? Chutz mea mitzvos. Mahu. What happens again? If he says that lamaisa, I'm selling him to you again, chutz mea mitzvos. Rashi says lo mafka me mitzvos lechala shabbosos. Inai machin lemek chutz mishabbos. Let's say he sells him to him, but with the condition that I don't want you to work the eved on Shabbos, right? So meaning I want his religious life to remain intact. Mau chutz mishabbosos yomim tovim. What happens if I sell him to you, but you can't work him on Shabbos and Yom Tov? So leger toshav liyistral mumer lekusi mahu. Or what happens if I sell him to a ger toshav? We'll say ger toshav is a Gentile who lives in Eretz Yisrael, who essentially agrees to live by the laws of the land, which means the Shabbos has been a Noach. Noavo de Zara, he agrees to be a Noachide. Or to Yisrael mumer, also, so Yisrael mumer is an apikores. An apikores, actually I shouldn't say that. A Yisrael mumer is someone who sins willingly. Someone who sins willingly, so, or a kusi. So we've spoken about the kusi many times. Kusi were converts, again, whose conversion was always suspect. What's the halacha? So we'll say all these questions raised. The question simply is, when you have a non-typical case, does the rabbinic penalty set in or not? So pashat miha chados. So the Gemara says we could at least answer one of these questions. What's the one question we could answer? Ger toshav. But so the one thing we do know is that a ger toshav is treated like an akum, and therefore, again, if you sell your eved kenani to a ger toshav, the rabbinic penalty does set in. Kusi v'yisra mumer. What about if you sell to a kusi or to a yisra mumer? So we'll say, so by Kusi and by Yisrael Mumer, that's a machlokes. Some say that they are treated like an idolater, and others say that ultimately they are treated like Jews. So we'll say, but for at least for our purposes now, we know that again, if you sell the Eved Kenani ultimately to a Ger Toshav, that's as if one has sold the Eved Kenani. That's as if one has sold the Eved Kenani ultimately to an Akum, and the rabbinic penalty would kick in. Barmini and Rabbi Ami. Eved shehepil atzmo legayasos, ve'ein rabo yachol lahotzio lo b'dini Yisrael v'lo b'dini ovdei kochavim, mahu sheyitol as damav. So it's an interesting case. Let's say you have an Eved. You have an Eved, literally translated, it means shehepil atzmo legayasos, literally threw himself to the bandits. In other words, an Eved that allowed himself to be captured by bandits. And the Yisrael master has absolutely no ability to retrieve him, either by using the arm of Jewish law or by using the arm of secular law. But these are not totally bad bandits, and they're willing to pay the Jewish master for the Eved. Is the Jewish master permitted to go ahead and accept payment for the Eved or not? In other words, again, we also remember, he's not, so the question really is the acceptance of money for the Eved considered to be a sale of the Eved to the non-Jewish master, which is Aser? Or do we say, look, and it's just not a sale, for the simple reason that the Eved was seized, right? And if I could extract my Eved, I would. I have no choice. So let me at least recapture some of the loss by taking the money. So Rabbi Yirmiya said to Rabbi Zveika, do me a favor, go out and do your research, and see if you could find an answer to this. Nafak duk v'ashkach. So Rabbi Zveika went out, and he found the following ruling. If one sells his home to a non-Jew, damav asurin. So the money is prohibited. Rabbi said, take a look at Rashi. Hamocher beis lo ovid kochavim, Eretz Yisrael. The Amakra lo sichanim lo sitein l'mchaniya v'kakra. Well, this is actually an interesting discussion. You are not permitted to sell property to a non-Jew in Eretz Yisrael. Not permitted to sell property. So let's say one sold his home to a non-Jew in Eretz Yisrael. So the halacha is dama vasurin. The money is aser. The money that you're not allowed to, you're not allowed to accept or get any benefit from that money. However, but if you have a non-Jew that forcibly took the home of a Jew, and the Jewish owner has no legal recourse, neither through Beis Din or ultimately again through secular law. What's the halacha? Mutar litol es damav. He is, the Jewish owner is permitted to, and now again, in this case, the Gentile, although he sees the home, is willing to pay for it. So the Jewish owner is permitted to accept the money. The kosef umala barko shalohem. And you should write a document of sale, and you should have this solidified in their court. Why? Because it will say, it's as if literally he's saving the money from them. So in other words, that if they're going to go ahead and take the home, at least the Jew should get the money. Meaning, why should the Jew end up without anything? At least get the money. So at least there's the hope that at some point in time, maybe you could repurchase it, or you could purchase another piece of land. Make sure you come out to the others. We'll say, so this would seem to be the answer in our case as well. In our case as well, the Eved has been seized by bandits. The Jew has absolutely no legal recourse to reclaim his Eved. At least get the money. At least get the money. So the Gemara says, Dilma Hanimili Bayis, but maybe it's not a fair comparison, because maybe this halacha is only true by a home. Because Rabbi say, this is actually interesting. Maybe we're okay with letting you take the money for your home. Why? Because Rabbi say, it's a very uncommon thing that a Jew would sell his home to a Gentile. And therefore, we're not concerned that if we let the Jew keep the money, that the Jew may come to proactively sell his property to the Gentile. About avda disagile below avda, but I will say when it comes to an eved, where a person could live very easily without an eved, asil zabune. Perhaps we have to be concerned that if we let the Yisrael keep the money from the akum, that what? That he may come proactively to sell his eved. Oh, lo. Or perhaps you need not be choshesh for that. Shalach l'Rabbi Ami, mini Ami, Bar Nosan, Torah, Yotza l'chol Yisrael. Excuse me, let me read that again. Shalach l'Rabbi Ami, Rabbi Ami sent the following message, mini Ami Bar Nosan, from me, Ami Bar Nosan, Torah, Yotza l'chol Yisrael. I want to deliver the following ruling, Tolov Klal Yisrael. Eved shehepe atzma legayasos. If you have a case of an Eved who allowed himself to be captured by bandits, ve'in rabo yacholot tzilob dinei shavlob dinei of the kochavim, and the master doesn't have the ability to reclaim him, either through Jewish law or secular law, mutar litol as damav, the Jewish master is permitted to take his value, to accept the money from the bandits, the kosev, and writes a document, umala ba'akol sha'ol dei kochavim, mepnei shuhu kimatzel miyadom. So we'll say Rabbi Ami Paskin, that halacha l'maisa, in the case of an eved who was captured by bandits, that halacha l'maisa, the Jewish master is permitted to accept the money, and is permitted to draw up a document. Mepnei shematzel kiyadom means, don't allow the Gentile to benefit unjustly. Meaning, if he's going to sell your eved, at least get the money. Because if you don't get the money, then ultimately, again, the Gentile has benefited on the back of the Jew. Amar Reb Shimon Levi, Hamocher Avdo L'Ovdei Kochavim, Konsim Otsa Me'Ebedamav. So Reb Shimon Levi says, if one sold his Eved, his Eved Kenani, to a Gentile, we penalize him to redeem the Eved up until 100 times of the Eved's worth. So let's say, so now this is a little bit different. And remember, Rashi alluded to this in the Mishnah, this idea that under certain circumstances, the Jewish master will have to redeem the Eved. So here you have Rabbi Shimon Levi saying that you have to redeem the Eved for up to 100 times of the Eved's value. Incredible. So the Gemara says, by the way, dafka lo dafka. Well, it's like when Rabbi Shimon Levi makes a statement like that, so is that just an expression or is that literal? Meaning when you say, have to redeem him up to 100 times his value, so does that mean you have to redeem him even if it's a lot of money? If it's a lot of money, or does it literally mean up to 100 times of his value? Tashma, damrei shlakish, hamocher be'magas l'ovid kochavim, if one sells a large animal to an ovid kochavim, kon sim ad asara bidameha, we penalize him to redeem the animal up until 10 times of its worth. My boss, the halacha is, that Neretz Yisrael, well, actually, the halacha is that a Jew is not supposed to sell a behema gasa, a large animal, to an obi kochavim, a large animal to a non-Jew. Now, both say behema gasa essentially means beasts of burden. So one is not supposed to sell large beasts of burden to an akum. Why not? What's the logic? So the Gemara Masechta Shabbos brings down the concern is that Jews may come to rent or lease their animals to non-Jews. And what's the problem with that? The problem is if the animal does work on Shabbos, so we know that again on Shabbos, one's animals are not permitted to work either. If I lend or I rent my animal to a non-Jew, that is still quote unquote a Jewish animal. And therefore that animal is still obligated to rest on Shabbos. If I rent it or I lease it out to a non-Jew, the concern is that it's going to be worked on Shabbos. Therefore Chazal instituted that a Jew cannot sell beasts of burden ultimately to a Gentile. So here the Braisa says that if a Jew sells a beast of burden to a Gentile, he has to redeem that animal even at 10 times its value. So the Gemara says, "Vidilma shayni eved." So here the Gemara is pointing out is that Lamaisa, again, here you only see that he's only obligated to redeem the animal at 10 times its value. So therefore, I both say that would appear to mean what? That when the Braisa said before that you have to redeem the animal, the eved at 100 times its value, that what? That's hyperbole. That's hyperbole. It's not literal. To which the Gemara says, well, maybe not. So maybe an Eved is different. Maybe an Eved does, you have to redeem it at 100 times its value. Why? Because an Eved, every day that is with the Gentile, it's what Rabbo say? The Eved is precluded from performing mitzvos, and therefore even after redeeming it at 100 times its value. There's an alternate version of this discussion. Rabbi Yoshua Levi says, if you sell your Eved to a Gentile, you have to redeem him even at 10 times his value. So the Gemara says, Dafka lo dafka, is that a literal statement or not? If one sells a large animal to an Obed Kochavim, Kon sim otsu an mea bidanas. We'll say, see here, these prices are reversed in this version. You have to redeem the large animal even for 100 times its value. To which the Gemara says, shiny Eved elo hadirle. Eved is different. Why? Because Lamaisa, again, we'll say, even when you redeem the Eved, what happens to the Eved when you redeem him? What happens? He goes free. Remember, you're about to say, here, you're redeeming the Eved, but the Eved goes free because of the rabbinic penalty. Therefore, the rabbis put a cap as to how much money you have to spend to redeem an Eved who's not going to be yours at the end of the day. Ela behema time am I. But why for an animal do I have to redeem it even for 100 times its value? Mushum dahadrole. Because why? Because lemaisa, again, the animal after I redeem it will come back to me. Ela, if that's the case, the Gemara says, liknisei tfeichad. So we'll say, if that's the case, so why do you have to go from 10 to 100? Say that an Eved you have to go ahead and redeem for 10 times its value, and what? And an animal for 11 times its value. Because since an animal you're going to get back, you have to be willing to pay a little bit more. To which the Gemara says, Ela Eved mosa de lo shchicha, excuse me, umosa de lo shchicha lo gazi bi rabbanon. Rather, Rabbi say, interestingly enough, the Gemara says that an Eved, now this is actually going to be an interesting case. The Gemara says that selling an Eved to an Oved Kochavim is a milsa de lo shchicha, is an uncommon event. And therefore, because it's an uncommon event, the rabbis were not gozer. Now that statement is a strange statement because the Mishnah said that they are gozer. So we'll come back and we'll deal with that in just a little bit. But for our purpose over here, what the Gemara means to say is it's a milsa de lo shchicha because it's uncommon. Therefore, the rabbis said that when you do redeem the Eved, you just have to redeem him at 10 times his value, but as opposed to the sale of an animal, which is a common event, the rabbinic penalty was you have to redeem the animal even at 100 times of its value. So, boy, we need Rabbi Yirmiyah asked the Shalif from Rabbi Yasi, Machar Avda Umeis, Maushik Nisuez Banabacharov, Esbinacharov. So, I'm sorry. So, the Gemara says the following. What happens if we'll call him Reuven? Reuven went ahead and sold his Eved Kenani to a Gentile, and then died. So the Shaila now is his son. Reuven's son, do we penalize his son and make him go ahead and redeem the Eved or not? So if you will say, Tsaram ozen bechor umeis, So we'll say the Gemara brings a comparison from a different case. The halacha is that a kohen gets the bechar behema. So the kohen gets the firstborn animal. The halacha is that animal has to be treated as kadosh. If that animal, on the other hand, develops a mum, if it develops some kind of blemish, so the halacha is that the kohen is permitted to go ahead and treat it as a regular, it's still the property of the kohen, but it's treated as unconsecrated regular animal. The case is the fact. Excuse me. Let's say the kohen intentionally blemished the animal. So in that type of situation, there is a penalty that was leveled at the kohen afterwards. If you look at Rashi, Rashi says over here, "Imtim Salomar hach demi baylan bebechoros kohen atzorin ozen abechor va'aver mishum komum lo yebo dermin hasam lo yishchat olamis." Shabbos said the penalty is that if a kohen purposely blemishes a bechor animal, he is never permitted to slaughter it. So here's the shaila. If a kohen blemishes a firstborn animal, and then he dies, so the shaila now is, the son now has the animal. So do we permit the son to shecht the animal or not? So the Braisa says no. But maybe I'll say the reason for that is because the isura d'oraisihi, because the fact that the father blemished the bechor animal, that was a biblical prohibition. So the biblical prohibition will devolve upon the son as well. Aval hacha, but over here, where the father sold the Eved Kanani, that's Isura Dirabanan. That's only Isur Dirabanan. So maybe in Isur Dirabanan, we don't penalize the son to make him make up for the mistakes of the father. Top of Mem Badal Reve Simtim Salomar, Kivei Malachta B'moiru Meis, Lo Kansu B'no Acharov, Mishum dolo avarisura. But here's another interesting situation. So kivim alachto amoyim is the following. The halacha is that one is not permitted to do work on chol amoyim if the work is not necessary. However, again, if the work ultimately, again, is what's called a davar ha'avud, if there's going to be a loss, then you're permitted to do it on chol amoyim. So the Gemara talks about over here a case of kivim malachto b'moyim. This is a case ultimately, again, of where the father purposely set up a situation where he was going to have to do work on Chol HaMoed. So let's say now, but if he doesn't, what's going to happen? If he doesn't, there's going to be a loss. So we'll say, under normal circumstances, if you purposely set up a situation where you have to do work on Chol HaMoed, and if you don't do it, there's going to be a loss, there's a rabbinic penalty. And the rabbinic penalty is we don't let you do the work. Let's say in this case over here, the father set up the situation where the work has to be done on Chol HaMoed, and then the father died. So now what happens? So now the Rai says, Lo kansu b'no acharav, we don't penalize the son afterwards. Now why don't we penalize the son? Because the son didn't actually do anything wrong. Mishum de lo avadisura. Now both say, even in that case over here, by the father didn't technically do anything wrong yet either. He just set up circumstances that would necessitate work on Chol HaMoed. But interestingly enough, the father died before Chol HaMoed. So in that case over there, we allow the son to do the work, since the father didn't do any kind of iser. But hachamai. But over here in the case where the father sold the Eved Kanani and then he died, Bosai, he did do something wrong. So the shaila is, do we make the son redeem the Eved or not? So the Gemara says, it comes down to a very simple shaila. L'didei kansu rabbana v'halasei. So the shaila is the following. When Chazal said that if you sell your Eved Kanani to a Gentile, that you have to redeem the Eved, what was the nature of the rabbinic penalty? Were the rabbis penalizing an individual, and therefore again, the seller, and the seller's dead, and therefore because the seller's dead, therefore again, there is no obligation upon the son to redeem the Eved Kanani, or is the rabbinic penalty on the property itself, on the Eved? And therefore the Eved is still alive, and therefore what? It is the obligation, bless you, it is the obligation of the son to go ahead and redeem the Eved. Amar Leitini Suos, I said we learn this, Sada Shinis Kavtza B'Shvias Tizra L'Matzei Shvias. We'll say, if you have a Sada Shinis Kavtza, Rashi says, Niskavtza means you remove the thorns. So remember again, technically speaking, one is not permitted to dethorn. I don't know if that's the technical term, but one is not permitted to dethorn a field during Shemitah. But if you did it, you are still permitted to work the field Matzei Shvias, and you're number 8. However, Nitaiba o Nidaira, Lotizim Matzei Shvias, I will say Nitaiba o Nidaira means fertilizing, but there are different types of fertilization. Nitaiba literally means you just spread fertilizer over the field. Nedaira means one of the ways that they would go ahead and fertilize a field would be that you would pen. You would pen the animals in a particular area, keep them in the area, and they'd fertilize the field just by definition by living there. So if you fertilize the field during the Shemitah year, lo tizra lamatishis. So both say there is a penalty, and you may not go ahead and farm that field on year number 8. What about in the following case? Let's say the father went ahead and fertilized the field during the Shemitah year, and then he died. Let's say he died during the 7th year. So what's the halacha? Beno zora. The son has the right to farm the field. What do you see from there? Alma l'didei kans rabbanon l'brei lo kans rabbanon. So we're going to say, what do you see from here? You see that the rabbinic penalty is upon what? Is upon the individual, as we call it, if we were to use our brisker terminology. It's upon the gavra, not upon the cheftza. So the rabbinic penalty is on the individual, not on the object. So therefore, in this case, so just like again, the rabbinic penalty is on the person who fertilized the field. Therefore, if the father is alive on year number 8, he can't plow the field. But if the father died and the son inherited the field, the son is permitted to work the field in year number 8. So too, the Gemara wants to suggest, so too, over here, if the father sold the Eved Kenani, the penalty to redeem the Eved Kenani is upon Urabosai, is upon the father. But if the father dies, that penalty is not levied or is not inherited by the son. To which the Gemara says, Amar Abaye Naktinon, Tzimei Taro Shalchavero Umeis, Lo Kansu Rabbana Beno Acharov. So we'll say similarly, this is an interesting case. If let's say again, Reuven is metame the taros of his friend, right? Reuven is metame the taros of Shimon. In other words, Reuven takes Shimon's produce and he drops a sheret. He drops a dead rodent in the produce. He's metame the produce, and then Reuven dies. Lo kansu rabbana beno acharav. The rabbis did not penalize Reuven's son in an obligation to make Shimon whole. My time, but what's the reason for that? Hezek shenoniker lo shmei hezek. So we'll say, so the idea over there, so that case is a little bit different. Why? Because we'll say that's the case of hezek shenoniker. That's the case of unrecognizable damage. When you make someone's produce tame, ultimately again you've damaged them, but that's unrecognizable damage. Uknasa de rabbanon hiladidei kansu rabbanon lebrei lo kansu rabbanon. So we'll say, so therefore bottom line halacha l'maisa, the Gemara suggests that at the end of the day, whenever there are two things we're establishing. Number one, whenever there is a rabbinic penalty, the rabbinic penalty is not on the cheftza, it's not on the object, but rather the rabbinic penalty is on the gavra, is on the individual. The extension, or the corollary to that principle is, because the rabbinic penalty is on the individual, not on the object, therefore if the individual who is subject to the rabbinic penalty dies, that rabbinic penalty does not pass down to his son. Therefore, for our purposes, if father sold Eved Kenani to a Gentile master, father is obligated to redeem him. And again, as we've seen before, even for multiple times value, whether it's 10 or 100, both times value, if father dies before redemption takes place, the son has, that penalty does not devolve upon the son, and therefore the son has absolutely no obligations of redemption for the Eved Kenani. So must remember again, so the next piece was that similarly if a master sells his Eved to Chutz La'aretz, the Eved also goes free. I will say, by the way, you understand, we have not yet discussed this dynamic of going free. Because, meaning, it sounds very nice. But remember again, the Jews sold this Eved to the non-Jewish master. So it's wonderful that you're emancipated. Abbas says, obviously, the Gemara doesn't say something, but goes without saying, the Jew is going to be chayef to the non-Jew the money. Meaning, so he's going to emancipate, the Eved goes free, and that's very nice. So there are one of two ways that could take place. Either, again, the Jew is literally going to redeem, he's going to have to go back to the Gentile master, to the Ovid Kochavim, and pay the Ovid Kochavim back the money that the Ovid Kochavim went ahead and paid for the Eved. And what we've seen is, even multiple times the value of the Eved. So the Gemara goes right there, Oluchutz La'aretz, Tan Rabbanon, Hamoche Abdo, Oluchutz La'aretz, Yatza L'chirus. If one goes ahead and sells his Eved to Chutz La'aretz, the Eved goes free. V'tzarech get shichrur me rabo sheni. And I will say not only that, but the Eved requires a get shichur, excuse me, the Eved requires a get shichur from his second master. Now, both say, the way the Gemara is setting up this case over here is that the Eved, excuse me, the Adon, the Jewish master, who lives in Eretz Yisrael, is selling his Eved Kenani to another Jew who lives in Chutz Lartz. Because remember, again, this is a separate case. Case number one was, you're selling your Eved Kenani to a Gentile master. That was case number one. Case number two is that you're selling your Eved Kenani to a Jew who lives in Chutz Lartz. So what's the halacha if that happens? So the second Jewish master who purchases the Eved must give the Eved a get shichur. Reb Shimon Amiel says, Pamim yatza, pamim lo yatza. There are some times where Eved Kenani is sold to Chutz Lartz where he goes free, and other times where he does not. Ketzad, what's the case? Amar ploni avdi mecharti ula ploni antuchi lo yatza. So we'll say, if the master, first master says, I have sold my Eved to so-and-so antuchi. Rabbi will say, antuchi is the name of a place in Chutz Lartz, Antuchia. So he's selling him to so-and-so who is in Antochi. So ultimately, again, the Eved does not go free. But say, why does the Eved not go free? We'll see this one. But however, la Antochi sheba Antochia yatza. But if I'm selling my Eved to Antochi from Antochia, then the Eved goes free. In other words, what? Because I say, if I'm just calling him Antochi, that just means he's from this particular place. But lav dafka, then I'm selling him to Chutz Laretz. If, however, the document says, the shtar says, I'm selling him to Antochi from Antochia, then that indicates that what? That I'm literally selling him to Chutz Lartz. I b'hatanya mechartihu l'antuchi yatza. But yet the Braisa says that if you say that I'm selling him to Antuchi, that ultimately he goes to Cherus. But l'antuchi ashari belud lo yatza. But if I say that I'm selling him to the Antuchi, because Antuchi is not the name of the guy. Antuchi is just descriptive of the place where he was born. But he lives in Lod. Then he's not Yotzi L'Chirus. So you see from the second Braisa, that's what? That the only time that the Eved is not Yotzi L'Chirus is if it's explicit that the person to whom I'm selling him lives in Eretz Yisrael. So Gemara says, Lokashia, Hadi Islei Beisa Eretz Yisrael, Hadi Islei Ushpiza Eretz Yisrael. Oh, so listen to this. If the person whom I'm selling the Eved to possesses a home in Eretz Yisrael, then I could safely assume that the Eved is going to remain in Eretz Yisrael. If I know, however, that the person that I'm selling the Eved to is staying at the Waldorf, then what, Rabbi Osai? Then that indicates that what? That he doesn't live in Eretz Yisrael. In other words, Rabbi Osai, what Gemara is saying is like this. If I'm selling my Eved to someone who I know has a residence in Eretz Yisrael, then I could safely assume that the Eved is staying in Eretz Yisrael. If, however, again, I'm selling my Eved to someone who's staying at a hotel in Eretz Yisrael, in Ushpiza, he just has a lodging but not a place of residence in Eretz Yisrael, then what? Then I have to understand that what? That I'm really selling my Eved to someone whose primary residence is outside of Eretz Yisrael, and therefore the Eved goes free. Well, so let's just do one more line. Rabbi Yirmiyah is following Kasha. Ben Babel, Shenasa Isha. We'll say, actually, you know what? We'll stop over here for today. We'll pick up with Rabbi Yirmiyah Amir Zashem tomorrow. No, I think we can do it. I'm sorry? We'll say. Again, just the general cloud is, you know, it's always possible that we're going to start 5 minutes, 7 minutes earlier than six. So if 5:45 the shiur starts, 5:45 the shiur starts, we probably will start sometime earlier tomorrow morning. I'm not exactly sure when. It'll be a game time decision.